All right, Gus Mueller, you and I have been friends. Manton, you and I have been friends for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Probably longer.
Probably
now.
A little bit longer.
And of course, you are a Mac developer. You are the founder and co-founder, I guess, with your wife. Is that right? Of Fine Meat Software.
Yeah, that's about right.
And of course, we've been your perfect guest for this show because we have on, you know, on the Main Core Intuition podcast spent now 9 years talking about indie software development and trying to make it as solo or small developers. And you have, in a lot of ways, been, you know, one of the models for us, showing us how it's done. So now you're here. Well, let's talk about anything else besides indie software development.
Anything but that, yeah.
When did you found Flying Meat, though? Because it must have, I mean, when I started reading your blog and even before we met, I mean, you had already founded the company and were like rolling with VoodooPad and other products. So like, do you remember? Do you have a year? Do you like keep track of that?
I know it was 15 years ago because everyone was talking about 15 years ago this past summer.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because there was Daring Fireball, there was Rogue Amoeba, and Flying Meat. I looked it up at that time and it was about 15, maybe just a little bit over 15 years ago.
Hmm. So, that's amazing.
Yeah, before that I had, you know, I was playing around with a couple of different company names and like I think originally I had like Augustum or Augisoft and like August Software. And it turns out there were some of these names were already taken and I had no idea. But yeah, and then once those were taken, I was just, I don't know what to call the company. And but there was this, you know, my company is named after a climb, a rock climb called Flying Meat, and it's one of my favorite rock climbs, so I just registered the domain name and started from there.
That's good. It's always good to have a backstory when asked. Yeah. So you can have one.
and this one's actually true. I'm like, Pixar is always saying, oh, you know, that's a better story. Use that one.
Right.
Yeah.
I seem to recall, is this right? So when I was kind of just getting tuned into the indie Mac developer scene, it was, you know, a couple years after I had left Apple. And I think one of the big events that came across my radar was the Evening at Adler in Chicago.
Yep.
Was that something you went to, Gus?
It was. I was one of the panelists for that.
You were one of the panelists. So I think that is how you sort of came into my understanding of the indie scene. You know, I remember thinking at that time when that event happened, I didn't go. I was still sort of just like getting into the scene. But I remember thinking like, wow, that just looks like such a cool thing. And like, it was sort of the precursor to C4, which Manton and I talked a bit more about on the previous episode of this show. But that was like, that must have been for you also a pretty early community event. And is that true?
It was probably one of the first. Well, I mean, I went to WWDC before then, but you know, and some of the indies kind of hung out together. And I had met Brent Simmons before as well at OS10 Con, you know, the old O'Reilly one.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about, you know, the Evening at Adler that just, it was perfect for its time. You know, we had, you know, who all was there? Paul Kafasis was there, I believe. Was he?
That sounds right.
Silverlight guy. Oh no, he's at Google. I can't remember his name now.
Oh,
Nicholas. Nicholas.
What's
his last name? Starts with a J.
Chitkoff. Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. He was there, and you know, and that app was huge at the time, and you know, Brent was there, and Drunken Batman. He was there.
Uh-huh.
And oh, wait, was he there? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was.
Probably. Yeah.
I think I watched the video. He was like the moderator, right? Or was Wolf ran?
No, that
I'm pretty sure Wolf was the moderator.
Yeah. Maybe you're probably confusing it with C4.
Yeah, that's probably. Hey, well, you know, years.
It's all a blur.
Anyway. It was, I know there were Unsanity people there, you know.
But
it was very much, you know, like a nice group of indie people together. And then afterwards, we just hung out too. And it was a great time.
That's cool. I was actually thinking about that last week because I was in Chicago and in the airport, like when I was walking to the train, there were some posters of, you know, just advertising Adler Planetarium and just, you know, here's stuff about the universe and why you should check it out. And it reminded me, I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but what was that like? I mean, it's a long time ago, but I'm curious, like, do you remember how many people were there and like just what it felt like? compared to like a conference today?
So there were about, I would say there were between 12, there were about 12 people on stage. I remember that. The crowd wasn't completely filled out in the auditorium, but I mean, I would say there were as many people as you would see it at like the, a CocoaConf.
Okay.
Or something like that. There was a good number of people. I was kind of surprised. It's funny, when I originally got the invitation for it, you know, I was living in, was I in Seattle at the time? I can't remember. They were like, hey, we want you to come to this. And I was like, you know, thanks. It's no fun. I mean, I won't be able to make it because I just thought they wanted me to come and sit in the audience. And they're like, no, we want you to talk. And I was like, okay. Yeah, sure. I'll fly into town and do that. So
I'll put it in the show notes. I managed to find a Vimeo of the whole thing. And it's, so it also has some supporting info here. It was October 21st, 2005, which is funny. If we would have recorded this 2 days ago.
Wow.
It would have been
12 years ago
to the day. And I'll just, you know, just to quickly set the scene, it's they list the speakers here. Bob Frank, Jason Harris, Nicholas Jitkoff, Gus Mueller, Eric Payton, John Wrench, Rosina, Will Shipley, and Brent Simmons and Drunken Batman. So quite a lineup.
And Justin Williams was in the crowd. I remember that. So.
Oh, yeah. See, it must have been a really great scene out there. And so many of these people did end up having a presence at C4 as well, which is where I first kind of, that was my first major sort of social conference event.
Yeah, the good old days. You know, what was that, about 10.2, 10.3 probably?
You mean like OS releases? I guess so. Jeez. No, yeah. Well, I left Apple at 10.2. So that was probably more like 10.4, 10.5.
Okay.
No one was running Mac OS 10 when it was just 10.2. It's too early.
I certainly was. I had to get off classic.
You know, we got a Mac developer on the line when we use OS releases for Mac OS as a clock.
Now we just talk about the code names. I don't remember the code names back that far.
Well, Gus, it's a kind of interesting timing because... you know, we have been talking, Manton and I, about the Mac development that we do. And Manton has sort of spent the last couple, maybe even few years. I know he does some consulting for Mac stuff, or, he has been doing some. But his own products, he's been focusing on iOS stuff. And he's kind of coming back to the Mac now with his micro.blog app. But Gus, apart from like, I think you took like a little... baby step into iOS development when the iOS, when iPhone SDKs first came out. But then it seems like you've sort of like retracted and just been focusing pretty much on Mac stuff, in particular on Acorn. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. iOS just hasn't interested me a whole lot. It did a little bit in the beginning, but, I don't want to invest any time into it if there isn't going to be, I guess, a good return on my investment. Because it's really hard for people to make money.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And so back then, I seem to remember you had like a Voodoo Pad Lite iOS app, right? Like just a companion app for the...
Yeah, so there were two. The original companion app I wrote was called Voodoo Pad Reader.
Okay.
And you could send your documents over there. You couldn't edit them because there was no text editing at the time, at least no native text editing.
Yeah.
Because why would you need to edit text on an iPhone? And then after some of the text editing APIs came out, then I created VoodooPad for the iPhone, and it would sync in between the Mac and, you know, the iPhone or the iPad using Dropbox. So it wasn't a very good app. It was like my first real iOS app, and it was, I don't know, kind of skanky, but it worked. It got the job done. I don't believe there was any rich text. Yeah, that's really all I've done on iOS. I mean, I've got some ideas. I'm actually working on a new app right now.
Ooh.
And from the beginning, I've sort of been looking at it from a, like, could I do this on the iPad as well as the Macintosh? And I believe I can. So
interesting. Yeah, because I mean, with Acorn, I imagine, like, if you had Acorn on iOS, as you said, it's just like unclear from a business perspective, partly because the App Store on iOS is just like overloaded with image editors. Yeah. It's harder to
stand out. Think it's unclear. I think it's very clear.
Okay.
I mean, you've got Adobe, you've got Affinity Designer, you've got Procreate, you've got the Alias apps. There's so many image editing apps out there. And people every once in a while ask me for Acorn for the iPad. And I'm like, why? What are other apps they're not able to do that you want Acorn to do? And the answer is there's pretty much, I mean, they all do what you need to do already. So there's no need for me to create an app that essentially already exists on the iPad. I'm not going to create something that's already been done, right? Because when I originally created Acorn, there was Photoshop, and that was pretty much it. Now there's a lot more image editors on OS X, but you know, if I'm going to write an app, I'm going to write something that hasn't been done or that I can do in a very unique way.
Yeah, it seems like to have like the only compelling reason to have an iOS version is just if you need it to support the Mac. Like if you're missing out on customers somehow, Mac customers, because you don't have the companion app.
Right.
Yeah, I imagine some people probably want instinctively to have the iOS version of your app because they like the Mac version so much that they just assume, oh, well, if this is my favorite on the Mac, then it would be my favorite on iOS as well.
Right.
Yeah. And some people are probably just like, hey, I want to pay for this once and get it for free on the iPad.
I get that as well. Even though I don't have an iPad app, you know, people just assume that I do. And they're just like, I bought this and I can't wait to load it on the iPad. And I'm like, no, wait, you know, sorry to disappoint you, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, at this point, Acorn is very mature app. It's been around for a long time. I can only imagine. I mean, this is not a simple porting effort. I mean, just moving code on my little micro.blog iOS app to the Mac and back and forth, like even that, which is a small, small fraction of the code base of something like Acorn, is a total pain to deal with different APIs on both. So I can only imagine what a massive project that would be.
Yeah, the core imaging framework, luckily, is both on the iPad as well as on the Mac. That would be Core Image, and they're very similar. So that would be easy to port, you know, a lot of my filters and stuff. But the UI, it would have to be a completely different UI. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the technology behind an app, that's an easy part. The UI is the hard part these days, just trying to get everything right. And that's the giant time sink, you know, where you iterate and you iterate and you iterate. And then you come up with something. Oh, that's obvious. Why didn't I think of that, you know, at the very beginning? But that's actually the hard part. That would be so much work. And I don't want to do that, at least yet.
So do you have any hints you can drop about your new app?
Oh, the new app. Yeah. So it's, do something no one's ever done before. So I'm writing a batch image processor. But, I mean, there's already a bunch of batch image processors for the Mac. And I don't know if there are on the iPad or not. I haven't really looked much. But I'm doing it in a very unique way. And I won't tell, well, I won't really describe that yet, but I've had
got to keep some secrets.
Yeah. Over the years, so many people have been asking for batch stuff in Acorn, and I add little things like, you know, there's automator support and you can script it and do all kinds of things to your images. But it's always seemed to me, I've always had all these grand ideas and different ways you could do it. And I'm like, this is really a different app. And so that's what I've been building for a couple months now. So,
neat.
And it's coming out, it's fun to play with right now. It's pretty interesting. So if anyone, you know, wants to beta test a batch image processor, if you have any batch needs, get in contact with me and I'll add you to the beta list.
Awesome.
So I could use some more testers right now.
Extra Intuition exclusive access.
Exclusive. I love it. Yes. the way you're describing this, Gus, it reminds me of something that I always think of Rogue Amoeba for, which is that idea of being like, hey, everyone's been asking us for this feature. It doesn't mean we should add it to the app. It means we should make a whole new app. And they seem so good at that. Like they've done, Fission was like the offshoot of people asking for, editing within Audio Hijack. So that's good. I hope that is, you know, because you went from, this is kind of another interesting point, I think, about your trajectory of Flying Meat. You went from having kind of like a few different apps, like a lot of us do. And then like you ended up canceling some apps and you ended up selling VoodooPad. And now I think you're down to just Acorn. And I'm sure there are a lot of advantages to that. But I remember distinctly years and years and years ago, you talking about, you know, your workflow, which I sort of understood and sort of emulated or naturally emulated, which was like, hey, work on one app for a bit, and then, you know, so you don't get bored, you work on another app for a bit. And it kind of sounds like you are you being lured back into that approach? Or, like, how much of this is, like, you want to have multiple products, and how much of it is just like, well, you just really want to make this thing?
Yeah, for years, one of my rules has been always have more than one app, because if something happens to that, your main source of income, you're kind of screwed, right? You know, if you get Sherlocked, if just competition gets crazy. So ever since I've, you know, sold off Voodipad, which was my other main app, I've always had it in the back of my head that it's, you know, I need another one out there. And Acorn's gotten to the point where, like you said earlier, man, it's very mature. That doesn't mean that I'm going to stop working on it, far from it, but it does the base needs of what everyone needs. So I can step back from a little bit and work on a new app. And in the past, you know, I had Voodipad and I had Acorn and FlySearch, and these were all very different apps. The nice thing about this new app is I can leverage so much work that I've done in Acorn already, and all my image expertise. So it was so easy to get up and running in the very beginning, you know, handling, you know, doing everything correctly with color profiles and bit depths and what have you. And it just worked right. So it was nice to get everything going really quickly and having everything done right. Whereas if I tried to do something different, like, I don't know, can't think of a good example. Oh, a blog editor. There we go. You know, I've got no expertise in blog editing right now. So that would have taken a lot longer to get started up on. And I, you know, if I'm bouncing back and forth between the two applications, then that really resets your brain. Whereas when I do it right now with Acorn, it's like I go from an image editor to a batch image processor. Mm-hmm. It's still in the image space, and I don't really have to reset my brain so much. So it's really nice that way. So I hadn't really thought about the Rogue Amoeba model. It makes sense.
And in a way, this kind of happened to start Acorn too, right? Because you had FlySketch, which was a smaller app, and then you added Acorn, kind of evolved into that. But at the time, it were two image-related products, and so it's kind of similar.
Yeah, so originally FlySketch was, you know, I was always in love with, you know, Corel Painter. It used to be Fractal Design Painter. You know, it's basically for artists to draw, and it's got awesome painting tools. So I sort of created FlySketch just to teach myself how to do those things. And FlySketch was basically a screenshot, you know, a markup app. And 2.0 of that turned into Acorn, and then FlySketch just sort of languished.
Faded away.
And then, yeah.
So, Gust, if you don't mind, explain what happened to make you sort of break the rule of having more than one product for the past several years. Or am I right? That's the case, right? Acorn has effectively been your only income.
It's been
for the last few years.
4 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Acorn was just doing really well, and so I just focused on it. It didn't seem very, you know, there is a danger, but if something happened and Acorn went away, I have enough savings to last me a while to be able to bootstrap another application with that.
Right.
So, you know, I was in a good position to be able to coast on that. It still made me nervous, don't get me wrong. And you know, I was always playing around with lots of other ideas too, you know, but in the end, now was a good time to do it. I wish I'd done it sooner.
Were you playing around with other ideas on the side, like a kind of like a, you know, 5% time, kind of like experimenting with other things that never turned into products? Or, how does that compare to now? Like, what's your, with this new app and Acorn, what's the split? Like, is the new app only a small percentage of your time, or are you actually focusing most of your time on the new app while you've already done a recent major release of Acorn, and that's kind of settled for a little while?
Yeah, most of my time is on the new app, just because that's what I'm focusing on. It doesn't mean I'm not working on Acorn. I've been fixing bugs. I'm itching to get back to Acorn and work on 6.1 because I keep on thinking up ideas. They're just kind of stewing in my head. I'm writing down all these things that I want to do for the next release, but I'm keeping myself from working on them for the time being, just because I'm already working on the new app, and I need to stay there to be able to, you know, get it going basically. Before this, you know, did I have any other ideas? Yeah, I had tons of little ideas. You know, I had a CocoaScript, which is my scripting language, JavaScript, Cocoa bridged runtime kind of thing. I had little ideas based off that. Me and Brent actually toyed around with some ideas in the past as well. Like I would write an engine for something and he'd do something, some other part that never really worked out or whatever. You know, lots of little things, but nothing really in the image space. And then once this idea kind of took hold, it just made sense. So I went with it instead.
You know, I was going to ask about automation because, you know, you mentioned CocoaScript, you've done the JavaScript stuff, automating Acorn. You spent a lot of time on JSScript and all of that. Daniel has good scriptability support with AppleScript and MarsEdit. And now that I'm kind of back into doing Mac software, I've been thinking about, like, what is the state of everything? Because, you know, I was thinking about this a couple of days ago when someone was asking for, like, keyboard shortcuts and menu items in my app that were missing. And I was thinking, you know, how scriptable does a Mac app need to be in 2017? And to be honest, I don't even know where to start. I mean, I've done AppleScript support in multiple Mac apps over the years, going back even to the classic days. I don't even know what people expect anymore.
Yeah, I think it's in a really sad state right now. AppleScript is just, Apple hasn't been doing anything with it. They could make it better. They could embrace JavaScript, I think, in a way that would, people are a lot more familiar with JavaScript. You see folks like the Omni Group who are just saying, okay, forget it, we're going our own direction. And they're creating, what do they call it? Omni.js or whatever. They've got basically JavaScript embedded in their applications now, even on the iPad. So you can script their applications. I think they're more like internal scripts, but I do believe they can talk to each other's apps. You've got apps like Sketch, you know, from Bohemian Coding. Their internal scripting language actually uses CocoaScript as well, but they sort of do it in a different model than Acorn did. Acorn supports, you know, both AppleScript and CocoaScript, you know, JavaScript. But besides Apple's apps, I don't think too many applications are really AppleScriptable, or at least nobody brags about it. I'm sure it still happens in the background, but I don't see the.
Yeah,
I think it's just Apple needs to do something if they want to keep it alive. And honestly, I don't know if they do.
Well, it's so frustrating because they did that whole push really pretty recently. I think it was 10.10 when they debuted the Apple official, you know, JavaScript OSA thing.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And nobody even remembers that because, I mean, nobody outside of like a few scripting geeks, because it's, I don't know, to my mind, it's not a success. And so it's like, even though it's like, it is familiar, it's JavaScript, it's really hard and confusing to use, I think, their implementation of it. So, but that's an example where they had like this last hurrah of like putting some effort into something. And I guess maybe that was, you know, time, maybe the last hurrah is parallel with Sal Segoyan, no longer being at the company,
but who was their head advocate, you know, for scripting and automation technologies.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. My impression is that, and you guys know, I make a scripting utility, FastScripts, and I feel like there's not as much interest in scripting in general. And that is probably in part because there's just like I think the Mac has gotten more popular, but I think it's good in many ways, but it's gotten more popular with a more sort of like mainstream audience that comes with the whole iOS attitude to software. So it's really good in a lot of ways, but I really don't think, probably part of the problem is, you know, Apple's not leading the way. And part of the problem is there's fewer users than ever pushing them.
Well, I would say there aren't fewer users. I'd just say it's a fewer percentage of users.
Yeah, right, of course. That's right. That's a good point.
So I was going to ask, if you were starting a brand new app today, what would you do? But that's not hypothetical. You are working on a brand new app, and obviously it is just asking for some kind of automation if there's batch processing, and some of that's built into the app, so maybe it doesn't matter. But like, if you were to release this app, what would you have like basic AppleScript support? Would you do CocoaScript? Like what?
Oh, it's going to be, it isn't AppleScriptable yet, but it is going to be, and there will also be a little bit of Automator support, but most of the automation happens inside of it.
Right. Okay.
So is that a good comparison that it's kind of like an Automator for image processing?
Automator is going to be compared. It's going to be wimpy compared to this.
Oh yeah.
Bold claims.
I like that bravado.
Yeah. I won't spoil it, but it's a neat new twist on that nobody else is doing. And I'm kind of excited about it.
So. Well, that's really exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
So it's funny, Gus, you were saying earlier, you picked up the hypothetical, like what if I was to work on a blog editor? And it's, you know, a little bit of trivia about you is you worked briefly on Mars Edit when Brent was still in charge of it.
That's right.
And so it's kind of funny. We've been joking, Manton and I, on the regular show lately about how we are semi-competitors now because he's coming out with a Mac app. And, you know, the three of us are probably, this might be the only time in history that three people have been on a podcast who has each struggled with the Meta Weblog XMR APC API. So I think what's kind of funny is we are kind of like this there's probably like this Venn diagram with the three of us where we have these really really funny overlaps and then these really funny disjointed, you know, areas. And some of that's, you know, that's great because we often over the years have chatted about things, our opinions about certain things, and we agree strongly about some things and other things we either don't agree about or agree less strongly about. And one of the interesting kind of rifts, not a rift, but a distinction in Manton and I, between Manton and I, has been growing over the past several years when it comes to Swift, because when Swift was announced, I think both Manton and I were like, whoa, shiny, but not yet. We had that whole conservative, like, I'm not going to touch that. And then over the past couple years, I've started warming to it, and to the point now where I think I've sort of like drunk enough of the Kool-Aid that if I were to start an all new app from scratch today, it would be probably all Swift. I want to just check in with you. Like, what has your attitude towards Swift been like? I think I kind of know, but I'll just ask it as if I don't. and has it been changing at all over the past few years?
Yeah, well, okay. So my new app is written in Objective-C, mostly because I have a huge code base already written in Objective-C, and there's no way I'm not going to take advantage of that. So Swift, initially I was like, woo, and then it turned out it wasn't Objective-C without the pointers.
Right.
So I like Swift. It's very neat. I wish it had dynamic, you know, message dispatch. Is that the right? Yeah. I wish it was more dynamic, basically. But the main reason I haven't been writing things in Swift is it keeps changing. I realize that the rate of change is slowing down, but it just seemed sort of almost irresponsible for anyone who's trying to build a long-term app, certainly to have to base their code base on Swift, with things just changing all the time, and you're having to fight compilers, and it's a beta language. Yeah, if you're a contractor, I think it's a beautiful idea to write your stuff in Swift. Why wouldn't you? I mean, it's a hot new technology. You know, the people who are paying you are like, yeah, use that stuff. And then they come back and have you pay you more in 6 months too, because you got to fix it because it doesn't compile anymore. But, you know, I'm just waiting for things to settle down a bit more for some of the patterns to sort of shake out and, yeah, things in the tooling to get better. Although the tooling has gotten a lot better in Xcode 9, so there is that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I occasionally get a little bit more optimistic about it than I should, because I've even though I'm gung ho about Swift now, the percentage of my code is very small that's in Swift, and I have to remind myself the tooling problems that exist, they're like multiplicative. So like, it's like if you have, you know, 100x the Swift files that I have, then, you know, compilers are slow, you know, yeah, all these things happen. But you're right, I think it has been getting a lot better, but I have to catch myself sometimes not being too enthusiastic about it just because I have like 10 source files in Swift, you know?
Right. So my new app has about 100 source files at this point, and I want to say it takes about 20 seconds to compile.
Right.
And you can't, yeah, that's nice. I mean, there's developer productivity, you know, on one axis, and then there's on other axes where, you know, I don't want to sit around and wait all day just because I changed some little thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking about this with my Mac app. Like, if I had started with Swift, would I have been able to? Because I've been able to build this app very, very quickly, and I don't know if I'd be able to build it so quickly if I was using Swift. I mean, part of that is I'm not as familiar with Swift, even though like a year ago I did build a full app 100% Swift. That was Swift 2. Whatever, and you know that code won't even compile anymore. But I don't know. There's something about building apps in Objective-C that is just really quick. And yes, you can take shortcuts and make mistakes and your app can crash, but it's just a really fun, dynamic way to create fast apps or quickly, create apps quickly.
Yeah.
And even if I was an expert at Swift, I'm not sure I could have built this app as quickly, but I don't know.
Yeah. Objective-C was the first language that I really got. So it works like my brain does, I guess you could say. Whereas Swift is a lot more buttoned up and super tight, and I don't really think that yeah, way. So
I feel like there are a couple axes to Swift, and like I am with you guys because I have this Objective-C bias, you know, in a lot of ways I'm with you, and then I think like there are these other programming styles, you know, taking into account things like the generic support and, you know, things where it's like the specific features in Swift, where I can imagine people listening to this going, what are you talking about? buttoned up, like it's liberating because you can write one class and have it operate on any type of, you know, object that conforms to a protocol. I guess I'm kind of like hopeful. I'm optimistic that when I start to like take in and really understand, like you say, like my brain works like Objective-C too, which does make it a little challenging to jump into Swift. But I'm thinking that as our brains work more in a Swift way, we actually will be a lot more productive in some ways with Swift, at least.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's experience, right? The more you use Swift, the better you're going to get at it.
I think that's true. And I'm looking forward to, you know, even though I complain about it, I am looking forward to like a year from now when I jump into Swift again, being able to at least stay up to date with what everyone else is doing. And there are some really nice things about the language. There's some things that are much cleaner and more modern. But like when I think back on languages that I've transitioned between, like actually C++ to Objective-C is a great example. My brain at the time worked in C++. Like I'd been doing it for years. And Objective-C was like a shock and it was different. And I didn't think about it that way. However, there was no denying the first time I saw how an app was built in Objective-C and Cocoa, and when I actually built one, that it was a major leveling up in productivity. Like, even though my brain didn't work that way, it was a significant step forward. And I'm just not seeing that with Swift. I hate to keep complaining, but like, I hope that like a year from now, you know, when I jump back into Swift, like there'll be new frameworks, there'll be more advancements, and that will be there. Like that, it'll be, like from a productivity standpoint, it will be better than it is today.
Well, yeah, there's a huge impedance mismatch, right, between AppKit and Swift, or UIKit and Swift. And so that causes a lot of friction, I think. You're not going to have that aha moment when you're creating new apps in just Objective-C, you know, that we had back then. Because unless there's a Swift UI framework, I don't know. Or they somehow make that bridging a little bit better. I realize it's not really bridging, but somehow making so that impedance mismatch doesn't happen so much. They could always make Swift more dynamic. That would be great. Then it'd work together great.
I'd be fine with that. I'm a little torn on what they should do. I mean, they should probably just make it more dynamic and make us old folks who like Objective-C happier. But I could also see the case for a brand new framework or set of frameworks that maybe they even work across Mac and iOS. That would be kind of a bonus that is designed in a very Swifty way. And if they do that, it'll be a productivity advantage. And also all the folks who were on the bleeding edge of Swift and they were there struggling through Xcode versions and when their code didn't compile, they will have a huge advantage over the rest of us dragging behind.
Yep. Someday.
All right. Well, Gus, thanks so much for being our first guest on Extra Intuition. We've only had a few guests on a regular Core Intuition podcast. And I love the idea of having guests on this show because we can try new things and we can talk about whatever without the confines of the latest news. Although this episode ended up being a pretty forward looking in terms of the latest stuff you're working on. So I'm excited to hear.
Breaking news.
I had no idea. You're first. Yep. I love it. And so what did you say? If folks are interested in checking out a beta, they should email you?
If you have lots of images and you need to do stuff to them, get in contact with me. Gus at Flying Meat is the best way to do it. Get a hold of me or support at flyingmeat.com. That'll work as well. And I can add you to the list.
Awesome. Well, that's that's an unexpected perk for our members because we didn't say like, hey, come on our show and make sure you have something special for our members. But folks who are listening, thanks again for supporting our show and feel free to spread the word far and wide about how great this interview was with Gus Mueller. And hopefully we'll get some more people in here to listen to it and enjoy the Extra Intuition podcast. Thanks again, Gus, for coming on the show. It's really great to chat with you. Remember some of those early days. Funny, it takes sitting down to talk about it to like really remember. Oh yeah, he was at the Evening Adler and those things. It's fun to reminisce about that. And hopefully it's fun for our listeners, especially, you know, folks who don't go back that far in our community to kind of get a peek back into what it was like back then.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks again for being on the show. Next time, we'll talk about pizza. I promise.